This is the NBC Theater. From the NBC Theater in Hollywood, an hour-length drama based on the F. Scott Fitzgerald short story, Babylon Revisited. Today's adaptation of Babylon Revisited has been prepared for the NBC Theater by Clarice A. Ross of NBC. Our intermission commentator will be the noted radio critic, John Crosby. The story we present today, Scott Fitzgerald's Babylon Revisited, is one of the finest of his short stories. It arises, in a very real sense, out of his own summing up of the period of years which was the most important in his own life. The story takes place in the early 1930s. But its motivation is in the lives led by its characters, and particularly by its protagonist, Charlie Wales, during the 1920s. The personal tragedy of Charlie Wales in 1931 is one possible arithmetical result to be obtained by adding up the years of the 1920s and dividing by the number of people present. One of the people very much present was Scott Fitzgerald. The decade of the 20s, the Jazz Age, as he called it, was his own. Some of his most perceptive and colorful writings are embodied in his essays on the Jazz Age, published recently under the title The Crack-Up. These thoughts of Fitzgerald's on the decade of the 20s form the significant background as well as the motivation for the story told in Babylon Revisited. Considering that a mirror is something of an abstraction when presented without the thing it is reflecting, we propose to introduce into our telling of the story those events and ideas which gave rise to it in the author's mind. Taking as our source material Fitzgerald's essays and notes in The Crack-Up, we allow Charlie Wales, as his story progresses, to remember, understand, and speculate on the reasons why things came to be thus and so. Herewith, Babylon Revisited, supplemented by Scott Fitzgerald's editorial notes on the Jazz Age. The next voice you hear will be that of Charlie Wales. Once in the middle 20s, I was driving along the high Corniche Road through the twilight, with the whole French Riviera twinkling on the sea below. As far ahead as I could see was Monte Carlo. And though it was out of season and there were no Grand Dukes left to gamble, the very name was so incorrigibly enchanting that I could only stop the car and, like the Chinese, whisper, "Ah, me. Ah, me, ah, me, ah, me." But it was not Monte Carlo I was looking at. It was back into the mind of the young man with cardboard soles who had walked the streets of New York. I was him again. For an instant, I had the good fortune to share his dreams, I, who had no more dreams of my own. And there are still times when I creep up on him, surprise him on an autumn morning in New York or a spring night in Carolina, when it is so quiet that you can hear a dog barking in the next county. But never again as during that all too short period when he and I were one person, when the fulfilled future and the wistful past were mingled in a single gorgeous moment. When life was literally a dream. You know the Hotel Ritz in Paris? It stands on the Place Vendôme and seems to gather around it all the elegance of that stately neighborhood. Well, the Ritz is headquarters for Americans in Paris, Americans with money. One look into the bar in the late afternoon and you can tell without reading the papers how things are going in the States. In the years when Americans treated Paris as though she existed for them alone in 1927 or 28, that room was always crowded, clamorous with voices that later at night would offer 1,000 francs to an orchestra leader for the playing of a single song. Now, it's different.
You don't see 20 friends waiting to begin an evening that won't end until tomorrow. You don't see 5 or 1. Your glance travels uninterrupted along the 20 feet of green carpet, and you know it's 1931.
Monsieur wishes?
Scotch and water.
Certainly, monsieur.
Well, there aren't many people around these days.
Oh, business is bad. Very bad. It is so quiet here without any Americans. One is in danger of falling asleep. Shall I mix the scotch, monsieur?
Yeah, that's fine. Thanks. Yeah, you always had 2 bartenders in here.
Ce n'est pas la peine, maintenant. Monsieur has been here before?
Oh, come on, Alex. 2 years isn't that long.
Pardon. It is foolish of me, but I do not seem to
The last recall. Time you saw me was the night of George Hart's bachelor dinner.
George Hart?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Mr. Wales. How could one forget? Good to see you again, Mr.
You too,
Wales.
Alex, you too. But you not remembering me, I used to feel as if I owned this bar. Well, it goes with everything else.
A 1,000 pardons, Mr. Wales. It was only that I've never seen you so... So...
Well, go ahead and say it. So sober.
Have you been away from Paris all this time?
Yeah, I just got back today. I feel a little like a ghost.
You will not find the city you knew.
No, I don't want to. I don't mind being a stranger here now. Paris has gone back into France, hasn't it?
Paris is still here. You look around at it, you will see.
You know, Alex, we spoiled this city for ourselves, all of us in the old days. We never took what it really had to give. We just lived through one day after another, and then it was all gone. Say, any of the old crowd still around?
Very few.
Mm-hmm. Fred Campbell?
Gone to Switzerland.
Oh.
Mr. Campbell is a very sick man, Mr. Wales.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. How about George Hart?
Back in America, gone to work. And about time, too.
What do you mean by that?
Why, his last year in Paris, he ran up a bill of 30,000 francs here, and he finally gave us a bad check. Now, you know he was a fine man, Mr. Wells. He wasn't the...
By 1927, a widespread neurosis began to be evident. I remember a fellow expatriate opening a letter from a mutual friend of ours, urging him to come home and be revitalized by the hardy, bracing qualities of the native soil. It was a strong letter. And it affected us both deeply until we noticed that it was headed from a nerve sanatorium in Pennsylvania. By this time, contemporaries of mine had begun to disappear into the dark maw of violence. A classmate killed his wife and himself on Long Island. Another tumbled accidentally from a skyscraper in Philadelphia. Another purposely from a skyscraper in New York. One was killed in a speakeasy in Chicago. Another was beaten to death in a speakeasy in New York and crawled home to the Princeton Club to die. And still another had his skull crushed by a maniac's axe in an insane asylum where he was confined. Now, these are not catastrophes that I went out of my way to look for. These were my friends. And moreover, these things happened not
Certainly,
during a depression.
I never would have thought you would do a thing like that. What has happened to people?
Alex, we got waked up out of a dream and daylight's hard on us. The whole race gone hedonistic, deciding on pleasure. I don't know what we expected. Well, so there's nobody here.
Oh, Mr. Schaefer is here. Mr. Duncan Schaefer.
Oh, is he? Well, look, Alex, if you see him, tell him I'm at the Bristol, will you?
Certainly. Another drink, Mr. Wells?
No more. I'm going slow these days.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. It was not good the way you were 2 years ago.
Well, that's over. Who else is here?
Let me think. Oh, yes, Mrs. Quarles.
Lorraine? How does she look?
The same. How do you find conditions in America, Mr. Wales?
Well, I haven't been to America for months. I'm in Prague. I represent a couple of concerns there. No, things aren't bad at all.
Well, I wish you good luck. Are you here for long?
No, just for a few days. I came to see my little girl.
I never knew you had a little girl.
Oh, yes. She lives with my wife's sister and her husband. Well, how much do I owe you, Alex? She's waiting for me right now. Ségur 2461, s'il vous plaît.
Hello?
How are you, Marion? It's Charlie.
Oh. Hello, Charlie.
I'm in Paris. You got my letter?
Yes.
Well, how's Honoria?
She's fine.
Well, may I come right over?
I suppose you may as well.
It's 42 Rue Palatine, you know. Same old place.
Right, I'll take a taxi and come right away.
All right, Charlie. Bye.
Well?
He's here. He's on his way over.
Brave man, after the welcome you gave him.
I was perfectly polite. What am I supposed to do, greet him with open arms?
Oh, look, dear, I know how you feel. But it hasn't been easy for Charlie, either.
Lincoln, I cannot care about whether anything's easy for Charlie or not. I hate him. I always will.
You always did.
If you're going to take his part
in this...
There's
no question of taking anybody's part. I just don't want you to upset yourself. After all, he's only here for a few days.
You won't... Well, you know what he wants as well as I do.
Well, it's only natural, isn't it? Honoria's his child.
And my sister was his wife. If he thinks I'll let him take Honoria after the way he treated Helen...
Well, he hasn't even asked yet.
But he will. What else do you think he meant by that letter? He wants to discuss Honoria's future, he says. After I've had her for 2 years. Loved her as if she were my own.
Well, what about me? I always think of myself as a man with 3 kids, not 2.
Would you want him to take her? The kind of life he lived...
Well, they both lived it, and so did everybody else who could afford it. Now, give the man a chance. He's probably changed.
Lincoln, when Helen was dying, she begged me to take that child so she could die in peace. Charlie's not going to take her away now.
All right, Marion, all right now. Calm down.
She's legally mine, and I won't give her up.
Nobody's going to make you give her up, but there's no point in spoiling the evening. It means a lot to Honoria.
Well, I suppose you're right. I'll see if they're ready. Honoria! Honoria, hurry up, darling. Your father will be here very soon.
Numéro 42, rue Palatine.
Oui, monsieur.
The 10-year period that, as if reluctant to die, outmoded in its bed, leaped to a spectacular death in October 1929, began about the time of the May Day riots in 1919, when the police rode down the demobilized country boys gaping at the orators in Madison Square. It was a sort of measure bound to alienate the more intelligent young men from the prevailing order.
Il fait bonsoir, monsieur, n'est-ce pas?
Ah, oui, vraiment. We didn't remember anything about the Bill of Rights until Mencken began plugging it, but we did know that such tyranny belonged in the jittery little countries of South Europe. If goose-livered businessmen had this effect on the government, then maybe we had gone to war for J.P. Morgan's loans after all. But because we were tired of great causes, there was no more than a short outbreak of indignation typified by Dos Passos' 3 soldiers. And presently we began to have slices of the national cake, and our idealism only flared up when the newspapers made melodrama out of such stories as Harding and the Ohio Gang or Sacco and Vanzetti. The events of 1919 left us cynical rather than revolutionary, in spite of the fact that now we're all rummaging around in our trunks wondering where we left the liberty cap we knew we had and the Mujik blouse.
Voilà, monsieur, numéro 42, rue Palatine.
Oh. Ah, combien ça?
160 francs, monsieur.
160 francs, bon. Oh. Alors voilà.
Monsieur, rien, monsieur.
Oh, tout.
Bonsoir, monsieur.
Bonsoir. Je crois que madame et monsieur Peters...
Daddy, Daddy, Daddy!
Oh, Honoria!
Daddy, Daddy, it took so long!
My baby girl, my old pie!
Daddy, Daddy!
Oh, here, here, now, get down, baby, get down. Let me have a look at you. Oh, what's happened to my baby? You're so tall.
Of course I'm tall. I'm a whole inch taller than Elsie.
Oh, Honoria.
Honoria, come on. You can't keep your father all to yourself.
Well, hello, Link. Glad to see you.
Well, Charlie, it's been a long time. Come on in. Marion and the kids are inside.
Good. Fine.
Daddy, will you stay a long time?
Well...
You will, won't you? You'll stay forever, won't you? And you can come to school with me, and we'll go to the Bois every summer.
Here, here, don't talk so fast, Honoria. You always get the hiccups.
Hello, Charlie.
Well, hello, Marion. You're looking very well.
Well, sit down, Charlie.
Sit here, Daddy.
All right.
So I can sit next to you.
Oh, say, I almost forgot. Here, look in this pocket pie.
Oh, it's a doll. Oh, Daddy, she's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Aunt Marion, look.
She's very lovely, darling.
May I get my doll, Bucky? May
sure,
I?
Sure, sure. Go on, get it.
Not now, Honoria. Dinner will be ready soon.
Oh, well, sure. Will you wait until later, baby?
Oh, Honoria, go in the other room and play now with Elsie and Richard so we can talk, huh? That's a girl. Tell us, Charlie. How are things in Prague?
Oh, they're pretty good, Link. There's quite a bit of business that isn't moving, but we're doing better than ever. In fact, I'm bringing my sister over from America next month to keep house for me.
Well, I'm glad to hear everything's going all right for you.
As a matter of fact, my income last year was bigger than in 28 when I had money.
You always seem to get rich, don't you, Charlie?
Well, I wouldn't call myself exactly... Those are fine children of yours, Marion. I can see they're well brought up.
We think Honoria is a great little girl, too.
Yes. What do you think of Honoria?
Wonderful. Wonderful. She certainly has grown. All the children are looking well.
We haven't had a doctor for over a year.
How do you like being back in Paris, Charlie?
It seems funny. Doesn't it, with so few Americans around?
Well, I'm delighted. Now, at least, you can go into a store without their assuming you're a millionaire. Of course, we've suffered like anybody else, but it's still pleasanter.
Yeah, it was nice while it lasted, though, wasn't it?
What do you mean by it?
Well, we were a sort of a royalty. There was a kind of magic around us. It was an age of miracles, an age of art, an age of excess, an age of satire. We were the most powerful nation. Who could tell us what was fashionable or what was fun? We were the greatest nation. There was gala in the air. It was all gone now. In the bar this afternoon...
Bar?
Yes. There wasn't a man I knew.
I should think you'd had enough of bars.
Oh, I only stayed a minute. I take one drink every afternoon and no more.
Oh, say, I'm a fine host, I am. Say, how about a cocktail now, Charlie,
No, not really. I take one drink every afternoon. I've had that.
I hope you keep to
Well, one cocktail isn't really a drink.
Don't urge him if he doesn't want it, Lincoln. It's too late now anyway. Call the children, will you? It's time to go into dinner.
There were the speakeasies of New York, the moving from luxurious bars which advertised in the campus publications of Yale and Princeton, to the beer gardens where the snarling face of the underworld peered through the German good nature of the entertainment. Then on to strange and even more sinister localities where one was eyed by granite-faced boys. And there was nothing left of joviality but only a brutishness that corrupted the new day into which one presently went out.
Elsie didn't know the answer at all. And then I gave it, and the teacher said I was very good.
Well, I think you're better than good. I think you're wonderful.
Daddy, will we go to see the clowns tomorrow, will we?
Of course we will. We'll have a good lunch, and then we'll see the clowns, and the acrobats, and the animals, and everything you can think of.
I saw a clown once, and you know what he did?
What did he do? What did the clown do, honey?
Honoria, have you said goodnight to your father? It's way past your bedtime.
Daddy, don't go away. Stay here. You can have my bed, and I can go and sleep with Elsie.
Honoria.
We've said goodnight, Marion. Now, off to bed with you, Pine. Come on. I'm going now. I strolled toward Montmartre, up the Rue Pigalle, into the Place Blanche. Here and there, the familiar door that still showed lights. But most of the old places were closed down and vacant, the signs that had gleamed so brightly, battered and falling apart. Here and there, a few people in evening clothes in front of cabarets. You know, it's sadder to find the past again and find it inadequate to the present than it is to have it elude you and remain forever a harmonious conception of memory. It was the half-forgotten familiarity that made it all so strange and I could see it for the first time. All the effort and ingenuity of Montmartre, all the catering to vice and waste on such a childish scale. In this arrondissement, in this very street, so many hours. Or was it years?
Eh bien, mon chéri.
Helen, do you remember?
Chéri, do not walk so quickly. There is no hurry.
Huh? Oh.
You look so lonely. Mm. One should not be lonely in Montmartre, especially at these hours.
One should not be lonely anywhere, but one is.
You may walk with me if you like. I will help you to be gay, to enjoy life.
So many years.
A drink would be nice. A place to dance, yes? Here is Ellie's. The crowd will be just arriving.
Empty. How much does Ellie pay you to bring people here? You'd have to catch a man pretty drunk to get him in there.
Chérie, listen to me. I live not far from here.
Zelie's. Remember Zelie's? It was a place to throw money away. Money as an offering to destiny. So that I wouldn't remember what I'd ever had things worth remembering.
Why are you so sad? You must be gay. Live and enjoy yourself.
Everything gone. Dead. Faded into thin air. Nothing made out of something. Money into nothing. Time into nothing. Lives into nothing. Oh, Helen, do you remember?
Chéri, what do you call me, Helen? My name is Suzette.
Oh, Suzette. You picked a bum date, I'm afraid. Run along now. Here's 20 francs. Go on home. Better luck next time. Finish your cauliflower, Honoria. Don't you like it?
Oh, yes, Daddy, I do.
Well, maybe you should have had two vegetables.
I usually only have one at lunch.
Now, let's see you get it eaten before dessert comes.
You don't have to tell me. I'm not a baby.
Oh, I know you're not. You're a young lady, and I want to get acquainted with you. May I introduce myself? My name is Charles J. Wales of Prague.
Oh, Daddy.
And may I ask, who are you, please?
Honoria Wales, mm-hmm. Rue Palatine, Paris.
Oh, married or single?
No, not married, single.
Oh, but that doll, madame, isn't that your child?
Well, yes, I've been married, but I'm not married now. My husband is dead.
And the child's name?
Her name is Simone.
Oh.
That's after my best friend at school.
Oh, honey, I'm glad you're doing so well at school.
I'm third this month. Elsie's only about 18th, and Richard's way down at the bottom.
Oh, you like Richard and Elsie, don't you?
Oh, yes. I like Richard quite well, and Elsie's all right, too.
And Aunt Marion and Uncle Lincoln, which do you like best?
Oh, Uncle Lincoln, I guess. Mm-hmm. Daddy.
What, dear?
Why don't I live with you? Is it because Mummy's dead?
Well, Aunt Marion and Uncle Lincoln take very good care of you, honey. You must stay here and learn more French. It would have been very hard for Daddy to take care of you so well.
But I don't need taking care of anymore. I do everything for myself.
Well, good for you. Now, through with your ice cream. Come on. We must be going. Come on.
All right. Oh, what are we going to do first?
Well, we're going to that toy store in the Rue Saint-Honoré and buy you anything you want. And then we're going to the Vaudeville at the Empire.
Do we have to go to the toy store?
Well, why shouldn't we?
Well, you bought me this doll, and I've got lots of things, and we're not rich anymore, are we?
We never were rich. But today you're going to have anything you want. Here, let's go out this way through here.
Well, all right. Let's hurry then.
Right. Charlie!
Hey, Will!
Daddy! Those people are calling you.
Well, Duncan, Lorraine.
Well, if it isn't old Whale. Still alive and kicking,
oh,
huh?
Oh, Charlie, Paris hasn't been the same without you. And who is this beautiful child? Your little girl, Charlie?
Yes, my daughter, Honoria. It's Mrs. Quarles and Mr. Schaefer.
Oh, how sweet. Oh, Charlie, it's been positively ages since we've seen
down,
you.
Sit down, Charlie, sit down.
No, I can't do it. Where's your husband, Lorraine?
Oh, couldn't come. We're too darn poor. He gave me $200 a month and told me to do my worst on it.
I wonder what he meant by that, huh, Charlie?
No, Charlie knows my worst isn't so awfully bad.
Voilà, petite.
I can speak French.
Steigende Kind.
Funny, Charlie, I never thought of you as the fatherly type. We all used to be so gay in the old days, didn't we? Honestly, sometimes it's just hard for me to believe.
The uncertainties of 1920 were drowned in a steady golden roar, and many of our friends had grown wealthy. But the restlessness of New York in 1927 approached hysteria. The parties were bigger, the pace was faster, the catering to dissipation set an example to Paris. The shows were broader, the buildings were higher, the morals were looser, and the liquor was cheaper. But all these benefits did not really minister to much delight. Young people wore out early. They were hard and languid at 21. And save for Peter Arno, none of them contributed anything new. Perhaps Peter Arno and his collaborators said everything there was to say about the boom days that couldn't be said by a jazz band. Many people who were not alcoholics were lit up 4 days out of seven, and frayed nerves were strewn everywhere. Groups were held together by a kind of, well, a generic nervousness, and the hangover became a part of the day as well allowed for as the Spanish siesta. Most of my friends drank too much. The more they were in tune to the time...
Honestly, it just makes me cry not to see any of the old crowd anymore. Oh, Charlie, remember how gay we used to be?
You sound as if you're not sure. Personally, I can't remember an evening that ended on a high note. They all faded out vaguely in bars.
All I know is the time used to go so fast. There never was enough of it. Now it never seems to end. Every time I have a birthday, I feel 5 years older.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
You were supposed to say something gallant. What are you doing for dinner, Charlie?
No, I'm not free. Look, you give me your address and let me call you.
Charlie, I believe you're sober. Dunk, pinch him and see if he's sober.
No, you give us your address, Charlie.
Look, I'm not settled yet. I better call you. We're going to see the vaudeville at the Empire. I've got to run along now.
Oh, that's what I want to do. I want to see some clowns and acrobats and jugglers. That's what we'll do, eh, Dunk?
Well, we've got some errands to do first. Perhaps we'll see you there.
All right, you snob. You get sober for 6 months and can't stand any of the people you liked when you were drunk. How do you like that, Dunk? Guess we're not good enough for Charlie anymore.
Well, Pie, did the clowns come up to standard?
Oh, they were wonderful, Daddy. So was the lemonade.
Well, I'm glad. Here, why don't you put your head on my chest?
Hmm? I'm not sleepy, but I'd like to anyway.
You. There we are. Darling.
What, Daddy?
Do you ever think about your mother?
Yes, sometimes.
I don't want you to forget her ever. Have you got a picture of her?
Yes, I think so. Anyhow, Aunt Marion has. Why don't you want me to forget her?
She loved you very much.
I loved her, too. Daddy.
Hmm? What, dear?
Daddy, I want to come and live with you.
Aren't you perfectly happy?
Yes, but I love you better than anybody.
And I love you, Pie.
You love me better than anybody, too, don't you? Now that Mommy's dead.
Well, of course I do. Better than anybody. But you won't always like me best, honey. You'll grow up and meet somebody your own age and forget you ever had a daddy.
Yes, that's true.
Hello?
Charlie, darling, at last I found you in.
Yeah, I'm just on my way out, Lorraine. How did you find the hotel?
You gave to Alex at the Ritz Bar.
Oh.
Charlie, what's wrong? I done something to offend you?
No. No, of course not.
But you acted so strangely today. Oh, Charlie, I've thought about you so much, so often. It's been so long since we've been together.
Well, it was nice we got to say hello.
Charlie, what's the matter with you? Don't be like that. Don't you remember? Oh, Charlie, remember the Riviera?
Yeah, fun.
I can't hear you.
I said, I'm sorry, Lorraine. I can't talk to you. I'm expected somewhere. Goodbye. The Riviera. Yes. You could get away with a lot on the summer Riviera, and whatever happened seemed to have something to do with art. From 1926 to 1929, the great years of the Cap d'Antibes, this corner of France was dominated by a group quite distinct from that American society which is dominated by Europeans. Pretty much of anything went at Antibes. By 1929, at the most gorgeous paradise for swimmers on the Mediterranean, no one swam anymore, save for a short hangover dip at noon. There was a picturesque graduation of steep rocks over the sea, and somebody's valet and an occasional English girl used to dive from them, while the Americans were content to discuss each other in the bar. Now, this was indicative of something that was taking place in the homeland. Americans were getting soft. In the spring of 27, something bright and alien flashed across the sky. A young Minnesotan, who seemed to have had nothing to do with his generation, did a heroic thing. And for a moment, people set down their glasses in country clubs and speakeasies and thought of their old, best dreams. Maybe there was a way out by flying. Maybe our restless blood could find frontiers in the illimitable air. But by that time, we were all pretty well committed. And the jazz age continued. We'd all have one more.
From Hollywood, the NBC Theater is bringing you a radio version of Babylon Revisited by F. Scott Fitzgerald. If you are interested in supplementing your enjoyment of these NBC Theater productions with home study under college supervision, be sure to listen to the announcement at the close of this program. And now, our intermission commentator, John Crosby.
F. Scott Fitzgerald, who died at the age of 44... 3 days before Christmas in 1940. I wrote his obituary for the New York Herald Tribune, and I'm afraid it wasn't a very sympathetic one. In fact, in its next issue, the New Yorker magazine took me rather severely to task for that obituary, declaring acidly and quite correctly that I must be a very young man, with no understanding Fitzgerald's work or of Fitzgerald's time. Well, none of us who were brought up in the Depression understood or cared much about Fitzgerald then. And it's a sorrowful fact that at the time of his death, the novelist was in almost total obscurity. Now, 9 years later, with another world war behind us, Fitzgerald's being rediscovered, or if you prefer his own word, revisited. His short stories, his fragments, his letters, his diaries, they've all recently been published. His best novel, The Great Gatsby, has just been made into a motion picture. And, of course, here, Babylon Revisited, probably his finest short story, is on the radio. Certainly, we understand Fitzgerald better now. We're much closer to him than we were in the dark depression days of the 30s. We are not at all the same type of post-war generation as the one Fitzgerald so sensitively described. But we are a war generation, and there are certain similarities. But what makes this writer so appealing today, on this 20th anniversary year of the stock market crash, are not the similarities, but the grotesque dissimilarity. I think it's very appropriate that NBC Theater selected, of all Fitzgerald stories, Babylon Revisited. Here the novelist tells the story of a man of total irresponsibility, finally coming to grips with responsibility. And that pretty well sums up the difference between the two post-war generations, his and ours. We all got waked up out of a dream, says the hero of this story. Daylight's hard on us. And he discovers that the irresponsibilities of the past still demand their terrible penalties in the responsible present. Fitzgerald has often been described as sort of permanent sophomore. But he isn't a sophomore in Babylon Revisited. He's an old grad returning to the old campus, a wise, hurt, and very lonely man. I think this is the loneliest story Fitzgerald ever wrote, the most revealing of himself and of his later years. In fact, if I'd read it before I wrote his obituary, I'd probably have been much more understanding and a great deal more sympathetic.
Thank you, Mr. Crosby. Our radio version of Babylon Revisited will continue from Hollywood after a brief pause for station identification. Because the utter confidence which was its essential prop received an enormous jolt, and it didn't take long for the flimsy structure to settle earthward. And after 2 years, the jazz age seems as far away as the days before the war. It was borrowed time anyhow, the whole upper tenth of a nation living with the insouciance of grand dukes and the casualness of chorus girls. But moralizing is easy now, and it was pleasant to be in one's twenties in such a certain and unworried time. Even when you were broke, you didn't worry about money because it was in such profusion around you. Charm, notoriety, mere good manners weighed more than money as a social asset. This was rather splendid. But as the eternal necessary human values tried to spread over all that expansion, things got thinner and thinner and thinner.
More coffee, Charlie?
No. No thanks, Marion.
Oh, did you see in the paper where Henry Ford has just produced his 20 millionth automobile?
There's a lot of automobiles, all right.
Yeah.
I suppose both of you know what I wanted to see you about, why I really came to Paris.
Go on, Charlie.
I'm awfully anxious to have a home, and I'm awfully anxious to have Honoria in it. I appreciate your taking Honoria for her mother's
Charlie.
Sake.
Charlie. But... we love her for her own sake.
But things have changed now with me. They've changed radically. I want to ask you to reconsider the matter. It would be silly for me to deny that about 3 years ago I was acting badly. No, Marion, that's over now. As I told you, I haven't had more than one drink a day for over a year, and I take that drink deliberately, so the idea of alcohol won't get too big in my imagination. You see the idea?
No.
Well, it's a kind of a stunt, don't you see? It keeps it in proportion.
Sure, I get you. You don't want to admit that it's got any attraction for you.
Yeah, that's it. Sometimes I forget and don't even take the one. Anyhow, I can't afford to drink in my position. The people I'm with are more than satisfied with what I've done.
Well, that's good to hear, Charlie.
Marion, my sister's coming over from Burlington to keep house for me, and I want so much to have Honoria, too.
Just your wanting
her. You know that even when her mother and I weren't getting along too well, we never let anything that happened touch Honoria. Now, I know she's fond of me, and I know I can take care of her, and... well, there you are. Now, how do you feel about it?
I'll tell you how I feel about it.
Wait, Marion. Charlie, we've been talking it over ever since we got your letter last month. Yeah. We're happy to have Honoria here. She's a fine little girl, and... well, we're glad to be able to help her. But, of course, that isn't the question.
And, how long are you going to stay sober, Charlie?
Permanently, I hope.
How can anybody count on that?
You know I never did drink much until I gave up business and came over here with nothing to do, and then Helen and I began to run around.
Please leave Helen out of this. Yeah. I can't bear to hear you talk about her like that.
Look, my drinking only lasted about a year and a half, from the time we came over until I collapsed.
It was time enough.
Yes, it was time enough.
My duty is entirely toward Helen. I'm only trying to think what Helen would have wanted me to do. You see, Charlie, ever since the night you did that terrible thing, you haven't really existed for me. I can't help that. She was my sister.
Yes?
And when she was dying, she asked me to look out for Honoria. If you hadn't drunk yourself into a sanatorium then, it might have helped matters.
Yes.
I'll never in my life be able to forget the morning when I found Helen standing at my door in the snow, soaked to the skin and shivering. And she said you'd locked her out.
You know what happened that night. We'd been quarreling for hours, and she was with that Webb fellow. I never thought she was coming home. I was furious.
Don't go all over it again. I can't bear it.
The point is, Charlie, that you want Marion to set aside her legal guardianship and give you Honoria. And, well, you see, it's just whether she has confidence in you or not.
I don't blame Marion, but I think she can have entire confidence in me. I had a good record up to 3 years ago. Of course, it's within human possibilities that I might go wrong any time, but if we wait much longer, I'll lose Honoria's childhood and my chance for a home. I'll just lose her, don't you see?
Yes, I see.
Why didn't you think of all this before?
Oh, I suppose I did sometimes, but Helen and I were getting along badly. And when I consented to the guardianship, I was flat on my back. The market had cleaned me out. I knew I had acted badly. I'd have agreed to anything to bring a little peace to Helen, but... Well, now it's different. Don't you see? I'm functioning. I'm behaving well.
Please, please don't.
Now, another thing, Marion. I can give her certain advantages now. I'm going to take a French governess to Prague with me. I've got a lease on a new apartment.
Oh,
I've got...
yes, yes. Of course, you can give her more luxuries than we can. When you were throwing money away, we were watching every 10 francs. I suppose you'll start doing it again.
No, I won't. I won't. I've learned. I've always worked hard until I got lucky in the market, like so many people. Didn't seem any use working anymore, so I quit, but it won't happen again. I've got plans now for me and Honoria, lots of plans.
And what about Helen and her plans? She didn't plan to die.
Hold it, Marion. Take it easy.
I can't help what I think. I don't know how much you were responsible for Helen's death. You'll have to square that with your own conscience.
Now, look, Marion, that's Charlie. Charlie, I know you were not responsible for that.
Helen died of heart trouble.
Yes. Heart trouble. You do what you like, Charlie. She's your child. I'm not the person to stand in your way. But if she were my child, I'd rather see her. You two decided I can't stand this. I'm going to bed.
Well, Link?
Oh, it's been a hard day for her, Charlie. You know how strongly she feels. Well, what can you do with a woman when she gets an idea in her head?
Yeah, of course.
Now, it's going to be all right. I think she sees now that you can provide for the child. We can't very well stand in your way.
Well, thank you, Lincoln.
Oh, I better go along and see how she is.
Yes, well, I'm leaving. I couldn't sleep that night. I kept thinking of Helen, how much we loved each other, until we began senselessly abusing each other's love, tearing it into shreds. I thought about that February night, the long quarrel, and the horror afterwards. And towards morning, I felt as though Helen were very near me, talking to me. She said I was perfectly right about Honoria, that she wanted Honoria to be with me. She said she was glad I was being good and doing better. She said a lot of things. Very friendly things, but she was in a swing, in a white dress, swinging faster and faster, faster all the time. At the end, I couldn't quite hear everything she said. Right? Those three dolls, and the tricycle, and that stuffed elephant. No, the big one. Good. Now let me see some pretty dresses. Let me see them all.
I believe you've spoken to every governess in the agency, Monsieur Wells. You have not found one to satisfy you?
No, not yet.
Mademoiselle Bayou?
Oh, she's rather slow, don't you think? My daughter is very bright and intelligent.
Naturally, monsieur. But Mademoiselle Armand, she has the highest recommendation.
No, I'm sure she'd be cross with the child. Madame, will you try again? I want to get someone who's just right. And... bring all pictures of Helen you can find. Want Honoria to see them. Love, Charlie. All right, how much is this to Burlington, Vermont, USA? You think I can count on taking her when I leave for Prague, Link?
I'm sure of it, Charlie.
Good.
About the legal guardianship, though. Huh? Marion wants to keep that for another year.
What for?
Well, you know, she's upset and all. It'll just make it easier for her.
Oh, sure, surely. Anything to make Marion feel better, as long as I've got Honoria.
There's nothing like your own child. But you understand how Marion feels.
She can't think of anything but that one night.
She doesn't want to. Don't you know that?
What do you mean by that?
Well, she knows you've got your feet on the ground now, and
and she knows it's only natural for you to want Honoria, but... Well, all that's logical. This other idea isn't. It's kind of hard to explain. She was sick and things weren't too good for us. I don't think she wanted to believe that Helen was ever very happy with you. She wasn't having much fun herself, poor girl, and, well, you know how sisters
they rode through those early days in an open car with the sun on their foreheads and their hair flying. They waved to people they knew, but seldom stopped to ask a direction or check on the fuel. For every morning there was a gorgeous new horizon, and it was blissfully certain that they would find each other there at twilight. They missed collisions by inches, wavered on the edge of precipices, and skidded across tracks to the sound of the warning bell. Their friends tired of waiting for the smash and grew to accept them as sempiternal.
When you and Ellen weren't getting along, Marion probably thought it was worse than it really was. And when something finally did happen, it just proved what she'd already convinced herself anyway.
Yeah, I get it.
And after that one night, the villain's mustaches were pasted on you to stay.
You know, Link, looking back, I can hardly believe those years. There we all were, supposedly mature men and women, working night and day to pile up nightmares for ourselves. All in the name of fun, excitement, and living with a capital L. I remember a perfectly contented wife and mother asking my wife's advice about having an affair right away because it would be undignified if she got much over 30. Oh, there was a kind of awful justice about the way we were all brought low. All but you. You never got hit.
I never got high enough to get hit. That was another thing.
What?
Well, while you and Helen were tearing around Europe throwing money away, we were just getting along. I didn't touch any of the prosperity because I never had any money to play with. I think Marion resented it. You not even working toward the end and just getting richer and richer
It went just as quick as it came.
Yes, but a lot of it stayed in the hands of waiters and saxophone players. Well, the big party's over now. I was just trying to explain Marion's feeling about those crazy years. Oh, Charlie, if you'll drop in about 6 o'clock tonight before Marion's too tired, we'll settle the details on the spot.
I remember an afternoon alone in our apartment, eating olive sandwiches and drinking a quart of Irish whiskey. Then out into the freshly bewitched city through strange doors into strange apartments, with intermittent swings along in taxis through the soft nights. At last we were one with the city, pulling it after us through every portal. And I remember riding in a taxi one afternoon between very tall buildings under a mauve and rosy sky. I began to bawl, because I had everything I wanted and knew I would never be so happy again.
Flowers are lovely, Charlie. Thank you very much.
I'm glad you like them.
These are the fanciest handkerchiefs I've ever had. And all the things for the children. Say, I guess the Peters family will never forget this visit of yours, Charlie.
Well, I'll never forget any of you. You've been so good to Honoria.
Thank you, Charlie. I just hope this is all going to be for the best.
Oh, our children are going to miss Honoria. You'll have to bring her back to visit, Charlie. Oh, say, how about a drink?
I'll take my daily whiskey, if you don't mind.
Sure thing. I'll have to go out and get a fresh bottle. It won't take a minute.
Marion.
Hmm?
There's something I'd like to say.
Yes, Charlie.
Family quarrels are bitter things. They don't go according to any rules. They're not like aches or wounds. They're more like splits in the skin that won't heal. I wish you and I could be on better terms.
Some things are, well, are kind of hard to forget. It's a question of confidence.
Yeah, I know. But I'm sure I can prove myself to you this time.
When do you intend to take her?
Well, as soon as I can get a governess. I hope the day after tomorrow.
Oh, that's impossible.
Why?
I've got to get her things in order. Not before Saturday.
Oh, well, Saturday is just as good, I guess.
Here's your drink, Charlie. I hope it's the way you like it.
Yeah, it looks fine. Thanks.
Oh, the parade of dolls and soldiers is in full swing out there. I doubt if we ever get those three into dinner.
Oh, and Charlie, I was going to tell you, it's hard to get Honoria to drink milk, so if you'll just have your...
Well, who can that be, I wonder?
faintest idea. I'm certainly not expecting anyone.
Pretty unlikely are if anybody would be calling.
Oh, well, it's probably a pneumatiker delivery. But why they'd come to the front door, I...
I told you he'd find out. Oh, persistent, patience, that's all.
There he is. There's Johnny. Surprise,
Marion, Johnny. Lincoln, may I present Lorraine Quarles and Duncan Schaefer and Mr. and Mrs. Peters?
Pleasure, enchanté. Any friend of Charles.
Come on, Charlie, come on.
What do you mean, come on?
Oh, we came to take you out to dinner, boy.
That's right, dinner.
Yeah, we decided all this cagey business has got to stop. Yeah. Come on to dinner.
No, I'm sorry, but I can't. Look, tell me where you'll be, and I'll phone you in half an hour.
Oh, Charlie. Charlie, you know what I want to do. Remember the night you stole the butcher's tricycle and peddled me all over Paris in it? I want to do that again.
Oh, wait, you can't do that. It's impossible. Three people on one tricycle. It's impossible. Now, come and dine, Charlie. I'm sure your cousins won't mind. We see you so seldom.
Yeah, I see you so seldom.
I can't. You two have dinner and I'll phone you.
All right. We'll go. But I remember once when you hammered on my door at 4 a.m. And I was enough of a good sport to give you a drink. Come on, Doc.
Hey, what do you mean, come on? We can't go without old Charlie.
I'm going. Are you coming with me?
Well, sure. But, gee, I don't want to go without old Charlie.
The door's over this way. I don't remember.
Good night.
Good night.
What an outrage. What an absolute outrage. People I haven't seen for 2 years having a colossal...
Oh.
Marion, don't go. Please let me explain.
Let her go, Charlie. Let her go. She's not well. She can't stand shocks. People like that make her physically sick.
But I didn't tell them to come here. They wormed your address out of somebody that deliberately
Whatever it was, it doesn't help matters. Now look here. I think we'd better call off dinner for tonight. Marion's in bad shape.
But do you believe me, Link? I haven't seen these people. I've steered clear of them.
I believe you, Charlie. It doesn't make any difference to me, but Marion...
Do you think she's angry with me?
I don't know.
Link, look. Don't. Don't let this make any difference to Marion about Honoria.
She's pretty bitter right now. I don't know. Well, I tell you, Charlie, you phone me at the bank tomorrow.
Oh, she'd explain to her. I never dreamed they'd come here. I'm just as sore as you are.
I couldn't explain anything to her right now.
Daddy.
Yes, sweetheart. What is it? What's the matter?
Daddy, what's the matter with Aunt Marion? Daddy, she came in and picked me up, and she held me so tight she hurt me, and I ran away.
It's all right, Honoria. Now go back. Eat your supper. Daddy's going now. Night, darling. The standard cure for one who is sunk is to consider those in actual destitution or physical suffering. This is an all-weather beatitude for gloom in general and fairly salutary daytime advice for everyone. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, a forgotten package has the same tragic importance as a death sentence. And the cure doesn't work. In a real, dark night of the soul, it is always 3 o'clock in the morning, day after day. There wasn't anything to be accomplished by tearing over to the Ritz to find Lorraine and Duncan. I didn't find them anyway. But through it all, it kept spinning in my head that I, Charlie Wales, had once spent the quiet hours of a Paris dawn pedaling around on a stolen tricycle. And it fitted in with things. It fitted with a lot of things. But how long had it taken me to get that far? How long would it take me to get away? Link, Charlie, I'm sorry to call again tonight, but this thing's on my mind. Has Marion said anything definite?
Marion's sick. Listen, Charlie, I know this isn't altogether your fault, but I'm afraid.
You're afraid what?
Well, I can't have her going to pieces about it. We'll just have to let it slide for 6 months, that's all.
I see.
I'm sorry, Charlie.
Sure. Good night. So here's a toast to Babylon victorious, to the unreality that lived to turn real, To the men who locked their wives out in the snow because the snow in those days wasn't real snow. If you didn't want it to be snow, you just paid some money and it wasn't snow.
Another drink, Mr. Wales?
No more, Alex.
So you're in Prague now and doing well. That is good. But it's a great change here, and we do about half the business we did. So many fellows I hear about back in America lost everything. If not in the first crash, then in the second. I heard that you lost a lot in the crash.
Yeah, I did. But I lost everything I wanted in the boom.
Oh, selling short, huh?
Something like that.
I would like to buy a drink to your success.
No, thanks, Alex. No more. I'm going.
Comme vous voulez. Good night, Mr. Wales. Come back soon.
Don't worry, Alex. I'll be back. I'll be back. They can't make me pay forever. Helen. Helen, you can't want me to be so alone. The watch is past the hour, and I've barely reached my thesis. If you've had enough, say so, but not too loud, because I have the feeling that someone, I'm not sure who, is sound asleep. Someone who could have helped me to keep my shop open. It wasn't Lenin. And it wasn't God.
You have been listening to Babylon Revisited, an NBC Theater production of the short story by F. Scott Fitzgerald. If you wish to increase your knowledge and appreciation of literature, we suggest that you might enjoy the college-supervised courses now being offered in connection with the NBC Theater. For full information, write to NBC Theater in care of one of the following universities or colleges: the University of Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky; the University of Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma; Kansas State Teachers College, Pittsburgh, Kansas; Washington State College, Pullman, Washington; the University of Arizona, Tucson, Arizona; Texas College of Arts and Industries, Kingsville, Texas; or Brooklyn College, Brooklyn, New York. You also have a chance to win a set of the famous Encyclopedia Britannica. Several of the universities and colleges offering these courses are giving the Encyclopedia as prizes to the students doing the best work. Enroll in a supervised course and you may be one of the fortunate ones to win the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, be with us again at the NBC Theater for a new and exciting adaptation of Ernest Hemingway's great novel, For Whom the Bell Tolls. And the following week for J.P. Marquand's Point of No Return. Babylon Revisited was adapted for the NBC Theater by Clarice A. Ross. John Daner was Charlie, Ann Whitfield, Honoria. Michael Ann Barrett was Marion, Don Randolph, Lincoln, Don Diamond, Alex, Gloria Hunter, Suzette, Doris Singleton, Lorraine, Jerry Hausner was Duncan. Your announcer, Don Stanley. Our intermission commentator was John Crosby, whose commentary was recorded. The director of the NBC Theater is Andrew C. Love. This program came to you from Hollywood. Theater Guild on the air. It's today on NBC. Two great stars, Helen Hayes and David Niven, will appear in Noel Coward's Still Life today on Theater Guild on the air. Be sure to hear Helen Hayes and David Niven in Noel Coward's Still Life today on Theater Guild on the air on NBC. You're tuned for the stars on NBC.